This week on the Dragzine podcast, we talked to Andy McCoy about his career in the pro mod world, what goes into building a car, and a whole lot more. So pull those belts tight. Get ready to put in the beams. The Dragzine podcast starts now. Welcome, everybody, to this week's episode of the Dragzine podcast. I'm your host, Senior Associate Editor Brian Wagner. This week on the show, Andy McCoy stops by and kind of get an interesting look into his career as a chassis builder and a racer, and kind of get to hear through his experience what pro mods kind of turn into. And it's a pretty fascinating conversation. So without further ado, let's get this drag racing party started. All right, my guest this week on the Dragzine podcast is legendary pro mod racer and chassis builder Andy McCoy. What's going on, Andy?
How you doing, sir?
Doing good, doing good. Thanks for coming on the show. Here is some people say the race season's winding down, but I think you know as well as anybody, the racing season never really winds down. It just gets slightly less busy for a few months, right?
Yes, sir. That is absolutely correct. And I really do appreciate you having me on the show tonight. I think it's going to be a good show.
Oh yeah, definitely, definitely. It's always fun to have some of what I consider, you know, some of the big names, the old school people on here, and you know, kind of going off of that, you know, you basically were at the forefront of the whole pro mod movement when it first started, right?
Well, yes, sir. I was probably in the forefront of the NHRA pro mod movement back when we were having exhibition runs in the NHRA and kind of testing the waters, which was it was pretty exciting. And that's kind of like when I built my first NHRA pro mod car and got invited to come to the NHRA, which I thought was like really cool at the time. And you know, they brought me on board, and you know, we did well. We struggled a little bit, but you know, for our first outing of us being a chassis builder and trying to get in to put on other hats as a chassis tuner, a clutch tuner, a driver, driving the rig, doing it all, it was kind of overwhelming to come in and start that whole series and do that. But I believe the first year that we did it, we qualified at like, I don't know, like 8 out of 10 races, which was like I thought we did very well at the time. And coming in as a new tuner, chassis builder, and the whole nine yards, we were running with those guys, you know, back in 2005, 2006, when we were doing that, 620s was fast, you know, and we were running 623 at, you know, 240 mile an hour and getting a handle on it fairly quick. So that was pretty exciting. And I want to say in 2006, I think we ended up, we're doing very well and finally made it to like the U.S. Nationals, biggest race ever. You know, we thought it was just, man, we're doing really good. And had a mishap. You know, we had a mechanical fuel pump failure, which ended up catching the car on fire and me in it, and went through some really bad scenarios there. Where we ended up in intensive care for a couple of days, burning my lungs and burning my throat and having all the ingest of the carbon and the fumes and the fire and the smoke and everything that we ingested. But we ended up learning a lot from that, because prior to that, you know, we were always thinking, you know, what is it that we need, you know, to be faster? And it's like, well, you know, we threw it out on the table that well, we could get a fresh air system or we could get a new supercharger. And it's like, well, you know, that's a no-brainer. We're going to take the new supercharger and be faster. Well, by the end of that year, when we caught on fire, I was really opting for that fresh air system, you know. But during that fire, that's when they had the Halon for our fire systems, and really open NHRA's eyes up that say, hey, you know, these cars, these pro mod cars that they're running here really ain't much different than a alcohol funny car. And so we were kind of the ones that pioneered the fresh air system, the really push fresh air systems in these cars. And then I started, you know, with me building more and more pro mod cars off of the NHRA deal. We started, and, you know, making it mandatory for ourselves to say, hey, we're going to put fresh air in every car we build. And we did, we started that back in, like I said, 06. And then after that, we got healthier and we got better. And then we came back and it's like, we need to make a comeback and prove to everyone that we're not a fly by night deal. We're here to stay. And so I rebuilt the car, came back out next year and ran NHRA again. And, did really well again, struggled, but because we were doing it all out of our pocket at that time. And it was roughly, at the time it was probably $8,000 to $10,000 a race to go and run Pro Mod. So it was difficult for an up and coming chassis builder trying to do it on his own, trying to race on his own, trying to learn everything on our own. But we ended up learning a lot and putting a lot of the safety features into other people's cars. And I think we ended up turning the heads at the time of Ohio Crankshaft and Scott Ray. So Scott and Stan came to us and they're like, "Hey, we see what you're doing and we'd like to have a car." And so we built them a car. And I remember we were racing Bristol, Tennessee, and they had gone, the quickest they'd ever gone was a 620. And he told me, he said, "You're gonna have a car ready for US Nationals?" And "Yes, sir, we'll have it ready to go." And so he pulled the motor out of that car and I took it home with me and we put it in and he went to the US Nationals and debuted it on the very first hit and went a 608 at 236. Qualified him in the top half of the field, never qualified it that well on an NHRA event and did very well. And I think that following year they ended up finishing fifth or sixth in points. So at that point, it got to be, what am I going to do? It's almost a full-time job just running a Pro Mod car. And then you've got a full-time job of building race car chassis. And what is it that I want to do? And I wanted to be able to help people and see them succeed in a race car. It brought me joy seeing them going out and winning and doing well and having a good time. So I decided to say, well, I can't really race much anymore. So I sold my operation to a guy in Australia. And at the time, we sold the 57 and we sold everything to him. And it wasn't too much longer. It was probably maybe 5 or 6 months after he had it. He went the first 5 second USA car to hit Australia. He was the first in the fives. And then that really got us going over there. I took several car orders over there. And then that really ramped us up for Andy McCoy race cars as being on the professional level. Like the guys like Jerry Bickle and Haas and McCamus and all those guys. We really became kind of, I wouldn't say notarized as those guys, but as an upcoming guy that is like those guys. You know what I'm saying? To where it's like, hey, this guy builds really nice professional cars. They run on the NHRA, they run over in Australia, and they're doing very well. So that kind of got us going on that level, and then we've never really looked back since then on what we've done, building cars and putting the safety stuff. I want to say on Scott Ray's car, we were the first to put in the full, like shoulder to head ISP systems in the car. We were one of the first ones to do that. And then, doing more and more of building these cars, I got to the point I was like, well, Pro Mod is really exciting. And people love to see these cars and people love to see the variety of the cars that are out here. So why don't we just go out there and build another body style? So I tackled that. And that's when we debuted or brought out the Duster body. And that was like really popular. People really loved it, even though it was a Mopar body. A lot of the diehard racers like the Chevrolet style bodies, but it being a Mopar body, a lot of people still liked it. So we tackled that, and that was like, okay, we're fabricators, we're race car builders. Now we're, venturing off into design bodies and composites and all that. So once that took off, I had Synergy Composites do all my molds and doing my bodies and doing all that. And it was just like, we'd really like to keep everything in house. So we brought everything back to the States and said, okay, we're going to do it in house. And so we started that project. And man, we got such a high demand off of the duster. People were asking us, okay, what are you guys going to build next? And it's like, man, I don't know. This was kind of just like trying to give ProMod another body style. And we got such a huge response off of it. And so then people started asking me when I go to the racetrack, what are you building next? And I was like, I don't know. So then I got to thinking about it. And I was like, man, back when I was in high school, I had a 70 Chevelle that I drove to high school in. And, it had the wheelie bars on it and parachute. And it was probably like a, back then, it was probably like a low 10 second, high 9 second street car. And I was like, maybe I ought to build a Chevelle. That's what I went to high school with. And that's part of me. So why don't I just build me a Chevelle? And so when I got to looking at it, I was like, well, I'd rather build the 69 looks faster than the 70. So let's just do a 69 Chevelle. And then once people got wind of us doing that, then it was like, we want one. We want one. How soon can we get one? And I was just like, man, it takes us a year to build these bodies. And I remember Mike Bowman calling me every week. I want a Chevelle. I want a Chevelle. I want a Chevelle. And I was like, Mike, I get it. I know you want one, but I'm not going to just throw it together because everybody wants one. Because if I make all my shortcomings just to throw it out the door, I'm going to see that in my molds on everybody I pop out. And I says, I'm just not going to do that. So he was patient. And when we got it all done and got everything finished up, man, he was on cloud nine with it. He was really excited. And that's when I got with Russell Miller had called me and says, hey man, we really like the Chevelle and we'd really like for you to build us a car. And I was like, okay. So I did. I told him, I said, I'll build you a car. And he was wanting, and it was going to be our first build of this Chevelle. And so we went ahead and was going to build it for him. But prior to that, we had run, I told you we were building our duster, and Jason Hamstra had crashed a car. So we went to him and asked him, hey, we got this duster that we built. Would you mind running it and showcasing what Andy McCoy race cars can build? And in our first year, he won the championship in ADRL Pro Extreme. And so that really kind of really put us out there again, that, hey, Andy McCoy race cars can build a really good quality car and they're championship quality. And then after that, I gave it to, after that season was over, I gave it to Terry Coyle. And Terry Coyle was going to drive it for a while just to, he was out of a car, so he was like, I'll drive it for a while. And he went to every race, even the World Series of Drag Racing. He went and won everything that he ever went to. Not only did he win, but he set track records with that car. So people, not only on the national scene, but on the local small track scene, we were kind of making a big splash there too. And then I had a guy want to buy it, and I told Terry, I said, man, look, I got a guy that wants to buy this car. And we ended up selling it. And the guy turned it into a turbo car, and he had a lot of success over on the West Coast. And then that's when I met Russell, and he wanted this Chevelle built. And he was like, okay, I want a Chevelle, but I want it flat black. And I want gloss black tribal flames on it. And I'm thinking to myself, man, that's just for our first Chevelle. That's just not going to really hit it off. So I asked Russell, I was like, man, I'm really appreciative that you guys want one of our cars, but your paint scheme and everything that you're looking for just isn't going to have a wow factor for being the first Chevelle. And he's like, well, what do you recommend we do? And I was like, well, I've got a few ideas, and if you would just kind of let me roll with it, I'll build you a really nice car. And he goes, okay, ball's in your court, just call me when it's done. And I was like, okay. So that's when, we came back, and when we raced our 57, it was a clear carbon. 57, but everyone's like, oh yeah, that's your own car. You do it for yourself. We wouldn't expect any less. So I got with my dad, Stan, which runs the composite shop, and I told him, I was like, I think we ought to do this Chevelle in clear carbon. And he goes, okay, we'll do it. And so we got together and we did this car. And when Russell came and picked it up, he was just like in awe with it. And at the time, I was asking him, he was wanting me to like be on his race team. And I was like, well, what is it that you want me to do? And he was like, well, we want you to kind of like maybe do chassis work and, help us out and get us going. So I asked him, I was like, well, who's building the engine and who's like, how's this all going? And he says, well, Rage Fuel Systems, Mike Kopchick is going to build the engine. And I was like, man, back when I ran my car, I was running a Waterman, and that's where my fuel pump mechanical failure came into play. And I had a few issues with it. And I was like, when I really started studying fuel pumps, Rage came up. And so I bought this fuel pump from Rage, and the quality was just a night and day difference. And I was like, so I'm building this car, and the engine builder is going to be Mike Kopchick with Rage Fuel Systems? And he's like, yeah. And I was like, wow, man, I really need to step up my game because that guy is like phenomenal. And that guy does all the fuel car stuff. So I was like, I felt like at that time I was building a car for a legend, for a guy that was going to build the engine and tune it. So I got real excited and I built this car for him. And like I said, when he looked at it, he was just in awe of that it was clear carbon and the stripe and just how it all came together. And he goes, we really want you to help us out. So I was like, okay. So then I went down, and that's when I met Mike. And I was like, man, I wasn't, no short of my expectations with him, because he was just phenomenal. The knowledge that he had, the machine shop that he had, the parts that he can make. And so we started racing together. And when I really started racing with these guys, and it's like, man, I've driven these cars and I've been around a lot of people that can drive these cars. But when Russell's son came into play, Tyler Miller, I was like, this kid is just a natural. I mean, he is an absolute natural at driving these cars. I said, this could be a very good team. You got an engine builder, you got a chassis builder, you got an owner that has his son in it, and it could be very well. So I started off with them, and man, we had some success. We struggled a little bit, but we had a lot of success in on that team, and I'm still with that team today. And just the stuff that we've learned and the stuff that we do, is a team. I've done more with those guys, stupid stuff, renting cars and trying to d jump ditches and, drag racing rental cars and, the stuff that you'd see on Days of Thunder, we've done it. And it was just some of the crazy stuff we've done. And that's what's made us all such a tight-knit family. And racing with the PDRA and racing with the NHRA, I've met a lot of great people throughout the years. But, when you got somebody like the Miller family, they're just like, they keep pumping you and pumping you. And they're like, we want another car. So now I'm building, we got a 79 VET that we're getting ready to debut for them in the upcoming months here. And they are just really, really good people to deal with. And then, I've had a lot of really great customers like Doug Winters. He races one of our cars in the NHRA. He's actually went to the finals in the World Series of Drag Racing this year and has done extremely well. He's won. Russell's got a Carolina Pro Mod Extreme race that he puts on, and he won the very first one. And we were racing in it with against him, and he won. So I was really glad to see Doug do so very well, because he started, shoot, I remember back when I was young and they had the Super Chevy days, and I was probably a teenager going to very first watch my Pro Mod races back when they were running Nitro Coupe and the Super Chevy days, when they were running the Pro Mods, and it was Jim Oddie and the Brasovich and, the Stroops and Winters and all those guys. I was watching Doug back then when I was a teenager, and I was like, man, that's just the coolest thing ever. And then who would have thought that he calls me up one day and says, hey, I'm Doug Winters, and I want one of your Chevelles, and I want you to build it. I was just like blown away. I was like very humbled that, you never know that, man, all this hard work that you put in, you don't really realize the people that are watching you, and the people that are really looking at your cars. Heck, I had Mike Janis call me one day, or ran into him at PRI, and he was like, man, I was watching the hamster car run, and I'm very interested in a car. I've got Alan Johnson doing a new 500 cubic inch motor, and we want you to build it. And I was like, wow, this is Mike Janis, And so we built him a car, and I've worked hand in hand with Mike at Rage Fuel Systems, which is like really blows me away because of who he is and some of the people that he deals with. We'd be together, and he's like, oh, I, talking on the phone just like normal, and he's like, oh, I'm just trying to help Jimmy Prock out with Robert Height. And I was like, really? I think I'm just a small town, pro mod chassis builder, and here I am, sometimes having dinner with, Jeff Prock, Jimmy Prock, Shirley Modowney. I was like, how did I get here? But it's the hard work and the dedication that we put in to build these cars to, that took notice of some of the people we were dealing with. And so, from starting out building little street machines or street rods with my dad in the garage at a very young age, since I was little, all the way up until today, where people acknowledge us as one of the top pro mod chassis builders, like, kind of really blows us away a little bit. It's like, man, we're very humble. We know we build really, really great products here because, some of our stuff is, our bodies are removable, which as I think I'm pretty close with it. We were one of the first to do it on a regular basis. I know there's other chassis builders out there that had made bodies removable, but we made them. I took a lot of flack when I brought my 57 out. All the pro mod guys were like, oh, well, funny car runs at 2 o'clock. Because I was the first one out there running a pro mod car with the body removable. Now you talk to Winners, or you talk to, Justin Souders and Todd Sportsman, or you talk to Russell Miller, and they'll be like, I'll never order another race car with a permanent mount of body on it. So we're slowly getting that transition over to show people the reason why our cars are good is because I was a racer myself. So I understand what it takes to be able to work on these cars, to be able to be on a time clock, NHRA, PDRA, whatever it is, on a professional level, and say, man, we got to get this car turned around in 20 minutes. I understand that. So I go in and I make these things easier to work on these cars, turn a two-man job into a one-man job, and really try and focus on saving them the time that they need to put tune-ups in them, to do whatever else they need to do. So that right there has been a huge thing for us with our customers. And just being able to compete against people like McCamus and Bickel and Haas and those guys is, it's just a feat in itself. And we feel, very blessed that we're even in that arena to compete with those guys. You know what I'm saying? And it's just a neat deal that we're continually working, and we're continually striving to build better and safer cars. And today, or back when we were running clutches in these cars, and it was a job. It was a job to show up and say, okay, I'm ready to qualify, and you have to qualify, one or two rounds on Friday night, and then you got to take it and tear the clutch all apart, take it all out, put a new clutch in, and you're constantly working on the clutches, and you're constantly doing that. It was just like a full-time job, constantly working on clutches and trying to figure out how to get them to lock up, how to get them to do what they need to do. And it was just like nowadays, it would take us Back when I built my 57, you could build it in 12, 15 weeks, no problem. Now, your 12 to 15 weeks is like a challenge because these cars have so much that goes into them. And they're converter cars, and there's so much electronics now, and there's inverter shocks and lockups and, gadgets galore. Because like in these cars, we run 5 and 6 speeds in these cars. And it's like in an eighth of a mile when we run PDRA, we're running 5 and 6 speeds. We built a car for Jericho Baldoff, and he puts a 6-speed in it, and he goes out and, has immediate success in that car. Where, he's running 370s like it's nothing. And it's really neat to see young kids like that, or people like Ron, which is the father that, really wants to spend time with his kid, and to see the joy that you're giving them. Same way with Russell and Tyler, it's a father and son thing, and you're giving them joy. You're making something, you're creating something that is giving them joy to be able to do things as a father and son. And, even the Winters family, that's a whole brothers, the two brothers do it, and their wives, and it's really neat. And then, I do cars for, guys in Top Sportsman, Justin Souders, him and his grandpa do this. So it's just really neat to be able to do things, to be able to bring the joy out in these guys and uplift them and see the success that they've had. So that's the reason why we keep doing it day in and day out and trying to do all that. So we're excited about the future as to what Andy McCoy Race Cars is doing. We've got a fab shop that we build all the race cars, and then we went over and started a composite shop, and now we've got 4 bodies now in our fleet from the time we started with the 57 to the Duster to the Chevelle to the 79 Vette. So now we're kind of building a fleet up of our own bodies of being a body manufacturer. And then now we just, this last year, I think we started out with our very first catalog. And, we started off with like a, I don't know, like an 8 or 10 page catalog, which now I call a pamphlet. But now we're up to 106 page catalog, and we're online, and we've got an online store. So it's been a tough road. We've been in business 19 years on our own. And in that 19 years, we've managed to build some really top-notch cars and some really awesome bodies and some really great components that any bracket guy or home builder or anybody that wants to tackle them themselves can order parts from us. Same stuff that we're building on Pro Mod cars and Top Sportsman cars, they can put on their street car, their bracket car, or whatever it is that they want to build. So we're pretty excited about what's going on here right now.
It's interesting kind of unpacking all of that and hearing you talk about all the things that you've done and, kind of seen the, seen these different cars come out. And that was one thing that kind of sprang into my mind to ask you about is, building, you're a builder and a racer. So that gives you a neat, interesting perspective that what works, what doesn't work, and why you kind of do stuff. What has been one of the biggest changes that you've seen in Pro Mod cars from when you first started building and racing them to what you guys have to do now?
Back when we first started this, that's a really, really good question. Back when we first started this, we were doing tune-ups. Like it was more in the fuel system, and we were tackling it as a timing management system, but it really wasn't that big at the time. And now, and back in the cars were real simple. We sat in a carbon fiber bucket seat. And we had our, if we had like an electronic system in it, it was the old Virgil Hartman where you had everything was air over electric. So if you was to turn something on through your timing management system, you had to do it through a little air cylinder. And you had to have a plug in an air cylinder box, and you had to pressure wide open throttle switch and see the timing, the timer come out on this little box. And it was like, it's almost like when I'm talking to some of the newer racers today, it's almost like talking to an older person about what phone you used back in the day. Oh, well, we had a dial-up phone, and the younger generation looks at you like, what is that? what is the cord fastened to? You know what I'm saying? You didn't have a smartphone. Well, back then we didn't have grids or, Davis traction boxes or the Davis, profiler boxes or things that would do each individual cylinder and the timing of the motor. We didn't have any of that back then. It was real simple. And the cars were real simple. Like I said, we sat in a carbon fiber bucket seat with no head restraint protection, just a set of 5-point harness belts. And,
A neck collar,
we're out
that's
running.
it.
Yeah, neck collar, and that was it. We're running 620s at 235 mile an hour. And, as things start to evolve, we started getting in. And one of the biggest things that I've seen is the seats that we sit in now. Whether it's a race tech seat, which is like sitting in a recliner at home, and you're running a converter and you run auto shift. Back in the day, we had Lencos and we had to pull gears. We had to actually drive these cars and ship them and manhandle them down the track. And nowadays, it's just like guy sits in there, sitting in a race tech seat, like he's in a recliner at home, and he's got a full head restraint around his helmet, and he's got on a Hans device that keeps him secured in. We run in 7-point belts. He's like very comfortable, can sit in there for hours without his legs falling asleep. And he goes up there and he stages the car and lets go of a trans brake button and then just holds it straight, and the car will shift for him automatically. And we've got all these safety devices to where it's like it's timed versus RPM. So when you're running an automatic shifter, let's say he goes out there and gets out of the groove and the wheel speed comes up. Well, a computer says, okay, wheel speed has reached its shift point, but has it reached its time point? Nope, it hasn't. So we're not going to shift, because back in the day when we started introducing the automatic shifters, cars would get out of shape, rattle the tires, move over out of the groove. Wheel speed come up, automatically shift into second gear, shoots guy across the track, he's into the wall. Bad scenario. Now, the equipment has evolved so much, and we got so much equipment in these. Like I said, man, 12, 15 weeks, it was no problem building a car. Now you got to fit a race tech seat in there. You have all these electronics, and everything has to talk to one another. I mean, we've got inertia shocks with AirPods on them, that when the car leaves the starting line, say at 1.2 seconds, the car will actually lower, because the car will drop a half inch to 3/4 of an inch, which gives you more bite, more bar angle, digs in as the converters come through and it goes through your shake zone. The car powers through that. You have a management system. So we've got a timing management that comes through, and it's all following a plotted line now. And if you're off 1 or 2 degrees, it'll add 2 degrees or subtract a half a degree or whatever it needs. And it gets it to go down through there. And then it auto shifts all the way down. And then the driver throws the chutes out and it's good to go. Well, we got to come back as, Mike Kopchick, he's trying to design all these engines. And the name of the game is, if we're making 3,500 horsepower, well, we want to run 3,500 horsepower from the starting line to the end. Well, we can't do that because the car would never leave the starting line. So we got to pull 15 degrees out. We got to run through our transition zone and try and get the timing back in 1.2, 1.5 seconds, and then get all these timers to work for what the shocks are doing. The fuel timers are all coming on and off. Everything's doing its thing in the car as it's shifting and going down through there. So you got to come back and we got to decipher all that. So all the computer data that we've got, because we used to have, I remember back when I ran, it was oil pressure, boost pressure, and fuel pressure, and that was it. So I ran three sensors in the car. And now we've got ride height sensors, we've got four-way shock sensors letting us know what the shocks are doing, we've got rebound sensors telling us how much rebound's coming off, we've got sensors out front to lock the front struts. We've got sensors that'll tell us what the G meter's doing. We've got, telling us what everything's doing. So It's just short of crawling into a space shuttle now of your switch panels, what does what you have to turn on, what you have to do when you do your burnout. You got to come to a stop. You got to make sure you push this button in, put this lever back, put it in gear, back it up. If not, the transmission won't, it'll lock up and you have to try and get it unlocked, get it back. So, I mean, there's a lot that a driver's got to do nowadays to get the car, to do it when it pulls to the starting line. But once they get it to the starting line and all they do is hold that button down and mash that pedal down, then they let go. Back in the day, we didn't have to worry about any of that to get back to the starting line. But once we left the starting line, there was a lot to do because, you had to hold that car at 6,000, 6,500 RPM. Clutch is trying to blow your leg off the clutch pedal. So you're trying to hold it in, you're trying to stage with a handbrake, you're trying to do all this stuff, and then once you leave, then it's pulling gears, bam, three speed, hitting shift points and making sure clutch locked up, clutch dust flying everywhere. It was crazy. Nowadays we don't have any of that. We've got converters and trans brakes and all that stuff. But to answer your question, there's a lot going on in those cars. And from what I've seen, the safety has just skyrocketed up. Now we've got roof panels, we've got leg panels, we've got door X's that are sealed off. So if you're in the event of a barrel roll, it tries to keep things from coming in or trying to, get the doors to keep from flying off the car and going out into the crowd. We've got tons of safety stuff. We've got shutoff systems where if a driver's knocked out, and he goes, 200 feet past the finish line, the chutes deploy and kills the engine and shuts the fuel off and does all this stuff that is in the event to protect the driver and protect the other racer from, a catastrophic accident. So, back in the day, we didn't have any of that, Now you still see accidents in HRA that we're trying to address, Mike Bowman last year, going, well over 200 mile an hour into the sand traps, and Caruso going into the sand traps. That stuff is we're trying to get these cars so light, we're trying to get them so sophisticated that everything is done electronically now, even the chutes. Very rarely do you see a guy shoot, throw a manual chute handle. It's all done, hit a button on the steering wheel and it's to deploy my chutes. Well, my chutes are all air. So everything's run off air. Well, if you lose air during the run, well, guess what? You don't have no chutes now, So that's a problem that we've addressed just here recently of having an air pound switch on the car that is tied into the electrical system. So if there's not 500 pounds minimum in that bottle, that car won't start.
No,
So
right on.
that's a really neat feature that we've come into to try and, we're really, really lucky that Mike Bowman or Caruso didn't get hurt in those runs. So we really need to address, some of these things before somebody gets hurt, which is, NHRA is taking over now, as a pro mod being a class. And they want to make sure that, hey, we want this to be safe. We want everyone to go home at the end of the day, just like I do. That's my job. And when I drove a car, I can tell a guy, sometimes, hey, you hung on too long. And they're like, no, I didn't. And I was like, well, okay, let's look at the data and try and teach them, this is a G meter, and this is when you stepped off the throttle, and this is when you look at a lateral G meter and the car is like left to right, and look how far to left to right it is, and you're still on the throttle. You got to be able to lift sooner or to, reach up and hit that chute handle manually to get you stopped or to get you straightened back out. You know what I'm saying? And we're in such a competitive sport that I'm not picking on the guys that are driving now because things happen in less than of a blink of an eye. And there is no thought process in it. It has to be an instinct.
Oh,
The
yeah.
no, I have to do these things this quick or I'm going to be in trouble. And me as a driver, I can relate to them of what they're going through, but sometimes I can and sometimes I can't. Tyler, I've gotten really, really good with Tyler, and we can talk about a lot of different things. And there's some things that I can talk to him about, and I can understand, and I can teach him something. And then there's other things that I can't really understand because back when I ran, the quickest I ever went was like 395 in the eighth. Well, Tyler's running 368 in the eighth. Well, we all know that, a tenth is huge. You know what I'm saying? So when you take three, four, five, six tenths, things happen way faster. So when I'm trying to talk to Tyler about some things, I can't really relate to him because I've never been as fast as he's been. So, or Doug Winters, I've never been a 577 or a 575 in the quarter at 248 or 250 mile an hour. But the principles are the same, and I can understand that, when you're in trouble, you got to lift. And what I try and tell people is like, man, these new seats are really a lifesaver. And when it comes time to some of these wrecks on back injuries or, some of the injuries that I've seen where, guys have broken ribs or, gotten hurt, I was like, shoot, I've had guys in Australia hit the wall at 230 mile an hour and walk away from it. I mean, just get out of the car and walk away, not a bruise, not nothing on them because I had them in a Racetech seat. But there's a double-edged sword to that because if you're sitting in like seats that we used to sit in that were rigid, you could feel every little thing in that car. You could feel tire shake coming on and short shift or lift or whatever you needed to do. When you get these Racetech seats in the car, there's so much cushion in them because it's like you're sitting in a recliner at home. Well, you can't feel tire shake because the seat's absorbing that energy. Well, they don't know they're in trouble until they're in trouble. You know what I'm saying? To where now the car's really upset and they're still in the throttle. And now when the car shakes, typically these cars don't shake straight. They shake left or right or, want to throw the car whichever way it's going to go. At that point, they're in trouble. So now you don't know, they could be into the wall or they could wreck and be hurt. So the seats are really good, but that's where I got to try and reel Tyler back sometimes and say, hey, we need to figure out a way that when the car is shaking, we can feel it sooner than later. So we've come up with ways to make him aware of that. And like I said, Tyler's such a natural driver. He knows when he's in trouble. He knows when the car's upset. He knows when something ain't going right. But some of the younger drivers, they haven't experienced any of that yet. And I try and give them, hey, this is what, we've got this technology in these cars now, and we've got all this safety stuff. It's great to have, but it's also a double-edged sword because you can't feel the car like we used to be able to feel a car. So those are some of the things that I've really seen come up is to be huge, from when I raced as a driver and now I'm a chassis builder versus having to tune a car or having to teach a young kid, hey, this is what we have to look out for.
Oh yeah,
So.
you go back through and you look at some of the older pro mods, Nostalgia Pro stock cars, or old nitro cars, or even older door cars, fast door cars, and it's almost like they're stone age compared to what there is now. Like you're talking about with the electronics and the differences, what's in the cars and the seats, and you look at them and it's almost cringeworthy when you look at just how some of these cars used to be built versus the advancements that we have now. And, kind of looking at those advancements, from the safety side of things, we talked about that. Do you really think that a lot of these electronics are what's pushed these cars into these absolutely just mind-numbing levels of performance that, not just the eighth mile, but the quarter mile levels?
Oh, absolutely. At the, you take a look at Shannon Davis and some of the stuff that he's designed as the profiler box. That will actually go out there, and you would take it and say, okay, well, I know how to tune a race car. I know where my fuel system needs to be. I know where my timing curve needs to be. And you put that timing curve in the car and say, okay, this should go out and run. And let's say I go out and run a 380, and that's fast. Okay, 380 at say 195. That's a no joke race car. That's fast, okay? But you look at it in today's terms against, Radial versus the World, where those guys are running 350s and 360s, and then you got Pro Mod blower cars running 360s. Well, you look at the 380s and you're like, well, that's not fast anymore. But back when you put that tune up in there, that was really fast. So you put this tune up in there, and now Shannon comes and tells you to say, hey, this is a self-learning deal. So you put a your curve in there, and then you add my you put you you turn on what you call corrections, and what it'll do is you can give yourself a window of 2 degrees or a half a degree. So okay, say I want to give myself a 2 degree window up and a 2 degree window down throughout this run. And you can go in there and have your corrections on, and then go out there and make that run, and that car will run the 380. And then you come back and you're like, okay, download the corrections. Well, it added my timing a little here and a little there. Now I want to trace that. So, okay, now I could have swore that I pulled 5 degrees out at 1.2, and now it's telling me that I don't need to do that. I need to add timing there, and I need to take timing away at the starting line and add timing here. Now you go out and you make a run. Now that 380 just turned into a 376. And you're like, wow. Now corrections were on again, and it narrowed the window up even more to where I trace that run and I go out and run it. Now 376 is a 373. And it's like, okay, now we're getting faster. Now we're getting a handle on it. And then you can go in there and trace that run until you've got it down to where it's tracing itself now. There is no more to add or subtract in on it, and you went a 370. So you just took a tenth off in one day just by this one box that Shannon sells and says, okay, that's great. But you can't run that box in NHRA because they look at it as it's got traction control or it's got things in there that we don't want you to have. But who's going to stop a guy from taking that box, building himself a timing curve, and then putting that timing curve in his grid and go out there and run an HRA, and you run a 370 in an eighth mile? That's going to be a 570 to a 575 all day long over there. So yes, the technology that we have today has definitely making these cars faster and faster and faster. And it doesn't stop there. You got guys that are building shocks and suspension that is like crazy, like an inerter shock. You can go out there, and if you're close on your tune-up and it starts to rattle the tires just a little bit, just the start of the shake starts coming in, the shock will lock itself up and stop and calm the tire down and send it on down through there. And if you start shaking a car, you're going to lose. If it shakes hard enough, you're going to abort the run. But if it starts quivering the tires and shaking them, and the power comes through and calms the tire down, you're going to lose four numbers easily through that run. Well, if you got the inerters with the dumps and everything on it, well, as soon as it sees it, it stops it. So you didn't even lose a number there, and it made the car faster. And people call me all the time, and they're like, well, what makes your chassis so different than a Bickel chassis? And or a Haas chassis or a McAmis or whatever. And I was like, we've all got our little things that give us a slight edge, but for the most part, a chassis is a chassis. Okay, for the most part. We're all pretty good at what we do. We've all been around it long enough. So where my edge comes in is the driver's area. If I get a driver sitting in a Racetech seat over a bucket seat, and he feels comfortable in the car, his reaction time is going to be faster. Well, if his reaction time is faster, then his 60-foot time is going to be quicker, and his 330 time is going to be quicker, and his eighth mile time is going to be quicker, especially if he's, trying to stage the car deeper or whatever. It's just at the end of the day, if it's racing a bracket car like a top sportsman car, and he's still manually shifting and he's comfortable, well, man, I feel like I can drive the wheels off this thing, and I shift it right on time, and I shift it right on time, and I throw my chutes out on time. At the end of the day, it's faster because the driver thinks I can drive the wheels off this thing because I'm comfortable. I'm indestructible at this point. And that's what I try and tell people. That's where my edge comes in, is that I get into the driver's head to get him comfortable. I feel very comfortable. I feel like, I'm unstoppable. When I drove my Pro Mod car, there were times when I'm sitting in the seat, man, I could slide to the left and slide to the right a good 3 or 4 inches, because the seat is slick. It's a carbon seat, and I built it. I built the cards, and it's like, hey, this is what we do. And I go out there and run this car, and I throw the chutes out, and I slide forward 6 inches, and it's like, wow, I'm moving around quite a bit in this car. And then once I started running the race tech seats and supporting the back of my legs, like on a 30 or 40 degree angle, I was like, shoot, man, once I get in this car here, I can drive it. And once I throw the chutes out, I don't move because my legs are forced against the seat by 4 or 5 G's. You know what I'm saying? And it's like, I don't move. And when Tyler told me, and everyone tells me, man, when I get in your car and I drive it, it's like driving a Cadillac. It's smooth. And then when I throw the chutes out, I don't move at all. My seat holds me right in place. And all those things, whether we're talking the electronics or shoot, even the stuff that Mike at Rage Fuel System does with the fuel systems, the converters, the technology in the converters or the technology in the shocks, all that stuff is making these cars insanely fast. And, shoot, NHRA had to go back and look at our chassis designs and say, hey, for years, I want to say for 2 years, we were running these cars. And they used to tag us a blue tag, which was a 6.0 and slower tag. And I was like, man, you guys know we're running 590s and 580s. We're running outside of NHRA's tag of what we should be doing. And shoot, NHRA came out and says, hey, we need to start tagging these cars red tags 49 and quicker. And it's like, good thing we did, because look at some of the shoot, look at when they were running that fastest streetcar shootout and Frankie and that Turkey Alizier guy were running 540s.
Oh, that's
547.
That's insane when you think about how fat, they're almost going as quick and fast as like an alcohol. Well, at the time they were going as quick and as fast as alcohol dragsters in a door car.
Right. In a door car. And you look at that Turkey that day that, Frankie went that 547, that Turkey went almost 270 mile an hour. And it's like, that is just insane how fast these cars are going. And for us as builders, I'm sitting there thinking, man, yeah, that's really cool. Those guys are flying. They're in one of our cars, not those guys, but when guys are in our cars are flying, that's great. But man, when it comes time to when if somebody overdrives it or something happens or there's a failure and the car is crashing, I know in my mind, it's like, man, I pray that that guy comes out okay. But I also know that in the back of my mind, I did everything. And I mean everything that I could possibly do to make sure that he walks away from that car no problem. And, we've been very blessed that I want to say one of my customers hit the net in a turbo car and it climbed up the net and he landed down on the driver's side and broke his leg. And that to date is by far one of the worst injuries we've ever seen in one of our cars. And, I'm so thankful that, we have people like SFI and NHRA, PDRA, the guys that really, really enforce some of the rules. And then we take it a step further and say, hey, I think we need this here. Or we need that here. We have chassis builder meetings all the time. And, I feel honored to be able to be in a building the same as McCamus or Bickel or Haas. And, the guys that have been doing this stuff for, 40 years, RJ, all these guys, I get to sit in there with them and it's like, man, this is like amazing that, people consider me, amongst one of the top chassis builders to be able to sit in here with these guys and listen to what they have to say and learn from what they have done over the years. You know what I'm saying? Oh, to yeah. Be able to carry that on and say, hey, we really want to, and St. Louis area has always been noted as, chassis builder country because we're all, I'm within 45 minutes of everyone except for RJ. We're all in this one little area, and everybody always asks, why are you guys all from Missouri? And I was like, I guess because it's the centrally located part of the United States, so we make it easy for everyone to come and see us. Now, I know there's other really talented chassis builders out there, Stroop and Pittman and those guys that are all over in the East Coast, and there's some really good chassis builders out in the West Coast, but I'd have to say that 90% of the cars in the country are built here in Missouri. So it's neat to be a part of that.
It's funny you mention, terrifying speeds in those in cars. And then the other thing that pops in my mind is Scott Palmer's, nitro powered Pro Mod. And the NHRA just sits in that car and goes, please, Scott, don't. Please, Scott, don't. Because if he uncorks that car, that's a 325 mile an hour door car.
Absolutely. And a lot of us were like, oh man, we hope that somebody picks that up. We hope that somebody will allow this. At one time, PDRA was wanting to have that class. They were wanting to have a nitro burning
Oh
class,
yeah,
and they actually put
the NHRA said nope.
no. Yeah, they're like, absolutely not. What are you guys thinking? I mean, they were actually going to put Mike at Rage in charge of that. What do you think we need to do for these cars, and what needs to happen? And when those discussions came about, NHRA came in and said, absolutely not. Shoot, I remember back when we were running ADRL, and I forgot his name, that was running a full, he was running an injected nitro car and a door car, and it was just out of control. I think he wrecked it more than he had success in it because it was just a handful. And we were all really hoping that, oh man, that would really give Pro Mod another shot in the arm to be able to have a nitro blown, full injected deal out there. But they just shot it down straight away. But yeah, you're right. That would have opened up another. At the time, we're looking at it, and we're like, oh, that'd be the coolest thing ever. And we're not looking at, okay, what other handful of safety stuff do we need?
Oh, yeah.
We just looked at, we just had a chassis builder meeting a couple of weeks ago, and they were like, okay, we're talking about introducing the 959 cubic inch motors in the NHRA and the centrifugal superchargers in the NHRA. What chassis need adjustments need to be made? And we all kind of, throw out what we think needs to be done because shoot, you look at a blower car and when I talked to Mike about it, Mike's like, man, those centrifugal chargers, they've got 500 horsepower over top of what a Roots blower is. And that's just impressive, to see. Look at some of those cars, man. Look at Rivenbark,
Oh,
running a 358 on radials with a pro charger. It's like,
I was there when he went 350s, and what people don't like, you see it on the live feeds and whatnot, and what you don't realize about that car is how effortless it goes down the
right.
track. You don't realize how fast it's really going till the board lights up, because it's just, it's not like a, like a Roots or a screw blown car where it sounds like it's trying to, destroy the earth. Or like a nitrous car that might do a violent, crazy wheelie, or a turbo car that, back halves. That thing just, he lets go of the button. It just, I mean, they've got that car where it rolls out. It goes.
Yeah, and that's a testament to Petty and Proline and Eric Dillard, and all those guys are really talented guys. And I talked to Eric, and he was telling me at one of the races, he was like, what made us so good was the turbo car stop, because the turbos were so finicky of where where things needed to be, whether you had a constantly changing your bar link or changing your converter or changing struts or changing ride heights or changing everything. He said, we've done that for years and years and years, and that's why we got so good at it. And when we decided to do a pro charger deal, he said it was a relief because it was so easy to go out and make power. And like you said, it was almost effortlessly to let go of the button and just send it down and see the 358 or 355 or whatever it is come up on the board. And they're like, man, what a relief, because now we don't have to work as hard. I mean, it's not that they don't want to work as hard, but it was just a relief for them to be able to run that fast, that effortlessly. And we always look at it, and we know as a builder or being around tuners or sitting there on the starting line, when that car leaves and it leaves smooth and it seems like it takes forever for it to get to the other end, we know that there's going to be a good number pop on the board because it just looked like it was a slow-mo run. And when we first went a 68, I was like, is that car ever going to get to the other end? And then a 68 pops up, and it's like, yep, I knew it was going to be fast. You know, didn't know it was going to be that fast, but I knew it was going to be a fast run. And sometimes when you see the car skating around and sashaying left, right, and it's like screaming like a raped ape, and the 78 comes up on the board, and you're like, where did that come from? I thought for sure it was going to be faster, but you're right. On those runs that are effortlessly, it just looks like it's so smooth and running. And you know, we're still on the roots deal. We're still trying to make more and more power. We got the new Noonan motor, and Mike's, you know, constantly working and working and working on trying to figure out, you know, cams and, you know, different setups and, you know, to find the horsepower that we need to go out and run those 350s. And, you know, he's been talking with Vortex, and they're like, you know, we could possibly, you know, be doing some blower dynos and some stuff for them that would be, you know, look at. I think that, you know, I told Mike, I said, I really feel like that centrifugal stuff is going to be the next big thing
Oh yeah.
of running fast. You know, that's what's going to be against the turbos. And so you're going to have the centrifugal superchargers, you're going to have the turbochargers, you're going to have the nitrous cars. And I think eventually you'll see some of the blower, the root stuff go away, which I hate to see that because people in the stands, man, they like to see the stuff sticking through the hood and the zoomies coming out and running a car that you can't even hear sounds like it's going to the grocery store and it's a turbo car. And then to see how fast that turbo car runs and to see the Willys and the Vets and the Camaros and all that, the fans really enjoy that. And we're kind of at a stumbling block at the moment because, you know, NHRA says, hey, we really want this class to prosper and we really want it to do well. But it's kind of like pro stock. It's every car that runs, every car that comes up is a 2018 Camaro. And, you know, we're trying to figure out ways to be more versatile. And I, you know, Bickles made the comment, I've made the comment that, you know, in NASCAR, aerodynamic is very important, you know, but in drag racing, it's important, but not as important as, say, NASCAR. So you really don't have to have, you know, a vet to go out there and dominate. You know, shoot, look at Victor Bray over in Australia, dominated for years in the 57 Chevy. His mile an hour wasn't there, but he still won six back-to-back championships in a 57 Chevy. It can be done. So we're really hoping that we can come up with something that won't turn it into a 2018 Camaro Pro Mod deal, you know, because we want the fans and the people on the internet to be able to enjoy it and see the different varieties coming up. So
Well, I think if there's anything that you can kind of glean from the radio versus the world stuff right now is that at least in the eighth mile right now, nitrous ain't dead. You know, Marcus Burke laying down that 55 was just bonkers. And then, you know, you still have the roots and the screw blowers that are right there in the turbo cars. And I think that really shows just the variety of what's out there right now and the bleeding edge of what you can do with some of these power adders is just. It's insane what, you know, that like, again, it circles back to technology, but at the same time, it just comes back to a racer's sheer will to want to find a way to go fast.
oh, yeah, absolutely. And we'll do whatever it takes to find it, you know. When we get penalized on something, man, we don't take it as we're getting penalized on something. We just take it as, okay, we got to work harder and figure out how to make this thing faster.
Yeah, you got to find
And
another way around whatever was.
another way around it.
Yeah, you know, that's it. You the worst thing you could do is give a racer a rule book because the first thing they're going to look at is, all right, how can I not cheat, but where's my gray area where they can't say no, you can't do that because it doesn't say it in there. That's what makes to me what chassis builders and what everybody does just interesting in how they attack those kind of challenges.
That's right. And that's what we do. You know, there's things that we've done before that, We've had implemented into the rule book that, hey, that was great. And there's other things that we've done before that was implemented in the rule book because we were in that gray area. You know what I'm saying? Well, I've done something great here in the rule book, but this rule was done up because of what I did. And that's a, like you said, it's a gray area, and we try and push those limits all the time. And I try and really put it into perspective. I don't take anything away from anyone because it's impressive what all we do. But when you look at Australia racing, and those guys are running 560s and 570s over there, that's impressive for what they're doing over there and what they're racing, but they're doing it with a screw blower. Look at NHRA. Look at those guys who are running the nitrous cars, the turbo cars, and a roots car at limited to a three speed, limited to a 456 gear, and limited to 2,600 pounds. And they're still running those numbers. And it's like, when you talk to the Australians, we've got a rivalry back and forth, and they're like, yeah, but you mates over there, you guys get to run, 400 or 500 times more than we get to run over here. And I was like, yeah, I know. That's the reason why I say it's impressive what you guys do and the technology that you guys have. And you guys get very limited runs. They may only run, a total of 10 times a year. And that's only like, say, they may only put 30 or 40 laps on their car a year.
Oh, there's
Well,
racers
shoot.
that do that here stateside. It's, April, and they've already
Like
done that.
nothing. Right. You look at the Chevelle of Russell Miller's, that car was built in 2013, and we figured it up, and we've got almost 700 laps on that car, and it's like, wow, it's like I almost remember every single one of them, but you don't really stop to think, man, 700 laps on a race car, that's a lot of laps on a race car. And you look at, Ricky Smith or Stevie Fast, that this is all they do, and they're out there day in and day out racing these cars and putting laps on them, testing them, figuring out what we need to do next, what's going to be faster, what's the next latest and greatest converter, what do I need to do, what's my next deal. I remember nitrous cars, man. They were running, okay, we're running three stages of nitrous. Yeah, look at them, man. They got nitrous on when they fire the car up, and when they let go of the button, it's like six, seven stages of nitrous in these cars now. It's like it's crazy, but it's neat at the same time because there's nothing cooler than to see a nitrous car leave the line at night and see that blue flame, blowing out all the way down through there. And you take stars of like Lizzie Musi, look at what she's doing now over in the No Prep Kings. Taking that over there, and she's dominating over there. So all of it right now is exciting. Whether you're doing Radio versus the World, you're doing No Prep Kings, you're doing NHRA Pro Mod, you're doing PDRA, or you've got the Outlaw tracks, even the Midwest Pro Mod series is a really exciting series now that Haney and those guys have built up. So it's an exciting time to be racing Pro Mod right now, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah. Well, Andy, our time here on the Dragzine podcast coming to an end. I'd like to give my guests their opportunity to do the best John Force impersonation and let people know where they can be found at and, on social media, online, and all that fun stuff and what they've got going on. So I'll turn the floor over to you for a second. You can kind of let people know where to find you out. What's up?
Okay. You can always check us out on andymccoyracecars.com. We've got an online store that you can shop and you can buy. We've got a really neat thing on there that you can build your own drag car, which is really neat. So if you're kind of like budget minded and you want to, you I got a certain budget in mind, you can click on there and build your own race car. And if it's within your budget, you can send it to us. We're also on Facebook. We've got a store on Facebook. We try and keep up to date with our, keep our customers up to date, keep what we've been doing here in the shop up to date, with the composite shop, the parts, the fabs. That keeps everyone up to date. We're also on Instagram. You can follow us on Instagram as well. And then we just try and keep up with everybody at the racetrack and let them know what races we're going to be at and what we're doing. So a lot of things happening here. We've got a lot of neat cars coming out for 2020. We've got the new Miller 79 Vet coming out. We've got another Batman car being built in the shop right now. So it's exciting times here at Andy McCoy Race Cars.
Awesome. Make sure, folks, you check them out online and see what they got going on at the track. And thanks again for coming on the show, Andy.
Hey, I really appreciate it. And I look at you guys a lot. I read your guys' stories, so hopefully more and more people get to know about Dragzine and what you guys are all about.
Awesome, man. I appreciate it.
Okay, I really appreciate your time, man.
Well, that wraps up the show for this week. Thanks to Andy stopping by and talking some pro mob with us. And as always, may your reaction times be crisp and your win lights bright. Until next week, folks.